This week's newsletter describes a proposal to separate the network connections and peer management used for Onion Message Relay from those used for HTLC Relay in LN. Also included are our regular sections summarizing discussion about changing Bitcoin's consensus and listing recent changes to popular Bitcoin infrastructure software. News first, separating Onion Message Relay from HTLC Relay. Oluluwa Osuntokun posted to Delving Bitcoin about allowing nodes to use separate connections for relaying Onion messages than they use for relaying HTLCs. Although separate connections may currently be possible, such as in the case of Direct Relay, as seen in newsletters number 283 and number 304, Osuntokun suggests that separate connections should always be an option. This would allow nodes to have a different set of peers for Onion messages from the set of peers they use for relaying payments. He makes several arguments in support of this alternative approach. It more clearly separates concerns. Nodes can cheaply support a greater density of Onion message peers than channel peers, as channels cost money to create. Separation may allow deployment of privacy-improving key rotation, and separation may allow faster delivery of Onion messages due to not being blocked by the HTLC commitment communication protocol. Osuntokun provides specific details about the proposed protocol. A concern of several replying developers was how the network for Onion messages could allow nodes to be flooded by an excessive number of peers. In current Onion message implementations, each node only typically maintains connections with its channel partners. Creating the UXO to fund a channel costs money, on-chain fees and opportunity cost, and is unique to the node and the channel partner. In short, it is one UXO, one connection. Even if Onion message connections had to be backed by on-chain funds, a single UXO could be used to open connections to every public Lightning Network node. This would allow one UXO to be used for thousands of connections. Although at least one respondent was supportive of Osuntokun's proposal, several respondents so far mentioned concern about the denial of service risk. Discussion was ongoing at the time of writing, Changing Consensus, a monthly section summarizing proposals and discussion about changing Bitcoin's consensus rules. First, developers continued a previous discussion, see newsletter number 348, about the benefits of OpCheck Template Verify, also known as CTV, OpCheck SigFromStack, also known as CSFS, or both together, for various deployed and imagined protocols. Of particular interest, Gregory Sanders wrote that CTV plus CSFS would accelerate updating the Lightning Network to PTLCs, even if LN symmetry per se is never adopted. Rebindable signatures just make life so much less of a headache when stacking protocols. S. Jaws Provost asked for details, and Sanders replied with a link to his previous research into LN messaging changes for PTLCs that's patent. Haprut conditional commitment, as seen in newsletter number 268. He added that PTLCs on today's protocols are by no means impossible, but with rebindable signatures, it just gets significantly simpler. Anthony Towns additionally mentioned that there's also a lack of tooling and standardization for doing a PTLC reveal in combination with a MUSIC 2-off-2, which would be efficient on-chain or even general transaction signatures, that is, X-check-sig-verif, IY-check-sig. This would require adapter signature support for MUSIC 2, and that's not part of the specification and was removed from the SECT256K1 implementation. Doing it less efficiently as a separate adapter signature would work too, but even plain adapter signatures for Schnorr signatures also isn't available in SECT256K1. These are also not included, even in the more experimental SECT256K1 ZKP project. If the tooling were ready, I could see PTLC support being added. However, I don't think anyone considers it a high enough priority to put in the work to get the crypto stuff standardized and polished. Having CAT plus CSFS available would avoid the tooling issue at a cost in on-chain efficiency. I think with only CSFS available, you continue having similar tooling problems because you need to use adapter signatures to prevent your counterparty from choosing a different R-value for the signature. These issues are independent of the update complexity and peer protocol updates Gregory Sanders describes above. First, Vault output script descriptor. S. Jos Provost posted to Delving Bitcoin to discuss how the recovery information for a wallet using Vaults could be specified using an output script descriptor. In particular, he focused on Vaults based on OP_checktemplateverify, also known as CTV. These are Vaults such as those provided by James O'Byrne's Simplic, DV Vault Proof of Concept Implementation. See newsletter number 191. Provost cited a comment from a previous discussion by Salvatore Ingela. Ingela said, quote, "My general take is that descriptors are the wrong tool for this purpose," end quote. Sankit Kanjalkar agreed with this sentiment in the current thread, but he found a potential workaround. Kanjalkar described a variant CTV-based vault. In this vault, funds are deposited into a more typical descriptor. From there, the funds are moved into a CTV vault. This avoids a situation that could lead naive users into losing money. It also allows for the creation of a descriptor that assumes all funds paid to the typical descriptor are moved into a vault using the same settings every time. This would allow the CTV vault descriptor to be succinct and complete without any contortions to the descriptor language. Continued discussion about CTV plus CSFS advantages for BitVM. Developers continued the previous discussion, as seen in newsletter number 354. They discussed how the availability of the OP Check Template Verify opcode, also known as CTV, and the OP Check Sigfrom Stack opcode, known as CSFS, could reduce BitVM transaction size is by approximately 10 times. These opcodes could also allow for non-interactive peg-ins. Anthony Towns identified a vulnerability in the originally proposed contract. He, along with several other developers, described workarounds. Additional discussion looked at the advantages of using the proposed OPTX hash opcode rather than CTV. Chris Stewart implemented some of the discussed ideas using Bitcoin Core's test software. This validated those parts of the discussion and provided concrete examples for reviewers. Open letter about CTV and CSFS. James O'Byrne posted an open letter to the Bitcoin dev mailing list. The letter was signed by 66 individuals, as of this writing, and many of them are contributors to Bitcoin-related projects. The letter asks Bitcoin Core contributors to prioritize the review and integration of OP Check Template Verify, also known as CTV, and OP Check Sigfrom Stack, also known as CSFS, within the next 6 months. The thread contains over 60 replies. Some technical highlights include concerns and alternatives to legacy support. BIP-119 specifies CTV for both Witness Script version 1, which is TapScript, and legacy script. Gregory Sanders writes that legacy script support considerably increases review surface for no known capability gain and no known savings for protocols. O'Byrne replied that legacy script support could save about 8 V bytes in some cases. However, Sanders linked to his previous PaytoCTV, or P2CTV, proposal and proof of concept implementation that makes this savings available in Witness script. Signatory Jameson Lopp noted he is most interested in vaults, which started a discussion about the proper is CTV vaults would provide. The discussion also covered how these compare to vaults deployable today using pre-signed transactions, and whether they provide a meaningful improvement in security, especially compared to more advanced vaults that would require additional consensus changes. Key takeaways from this discussion included: first, both pre-signed and CTV vaults must prevent users from reusing vaulting addresses, or funds are likely to be lost. One way this can be accomplished is by a two-step vaulting procedure, requiring two on-chain transactions to deposit funds into the vault. More advanced vaults, requiring additional consensus changes, would not have this problem, allowing deposits even to a reused address. However, that would, of course, reduce privacy, theft of staged funds. Both pre-signed and CTV vaults allow theft of authorized withdrawals. For example, vault user Bob wants to pay 1 Bitcoin to Alice. With pre-signed and CTV vaults, Bob uses the following procedure. First, he withdraws 1 Bitcoin, plus possibly fees, from his vault to a staging address. Second, he waits the amount of time defined by the vault. Third, he transfers 1 Bitcoin to Alice. If Mallory has stolen Bob's staging key, she can steal the 1 Bitcoin after the withdrawal completes, but before the transaction to Alice confirms. However, even if Mallory also compromises the withdrawal key, she cannot steal any funds remaining in the vault. This is because Bob can interrupt any pending withdrawal and redirect the funds to a safe address protected by an ultra-secure key or keys. More advanced vaults do not require the staging step. Bob's withdrawal could only go to either Alice or the safe address. This prevents Mallory from being able to steal funds between the withdrawal and spend steps. First, key deletion is an advantage of CTV-based vaults over pre-signed vaults. They do not require deleting private keys to ensure that the set of pre-signed transactions are the only spending options available. However, Gregory Maxwell noted that it is simple to design software to delete a key immediately after signing the transactions, without ever exposing the private key to users. No hardware signing devices are known to support this directly at present, although at least one device supports it via manual user intervention. But it's also the case that no hardware supports CTV, even for testing at present, to the best of our knowledge. More advanced vaults would share the keyless advantage of CTV, but would also require integration into software and hardware. Static state, a claimed advantage of CTV-based vaults over pre-signed vaults, is that it might be possible to compute all information necessary to recover the wallet from a static backup. This could be, for example, an output script descriptor. However, there has already been work on pre-signed vaults that also allow static backups. This is done by storing the non-deterministic parts of the pre-signed state in the on-chain transactions themselves. See newsletter number 255. Optech believes more advanced vaults could also be recovered from static state, but we had not verified this by press time. Responses from Bitcoin Core contributors. As of this writing, four individuals Optech recognize is as currently active Bitcoin Core contributors responded to the letter on the mailing list. They said, Gregory Sanders, this letter is asking for feedback from the technical community, and this is my feedback. Undeployed Bitcoin improvement proposals, or BIPs, that have not received any updates in years, is generally not a sign of proposal health. And it certainly isn't a good reason to reject technical advice from someone who's paid close attention. I reject this framing. I also reject the raising of the bar for changes to this proposal, limiting them to only egregious breaks. And I obviously reject a time-based ultimatum for BIP 119 as it currently is. I still think check template verify or CTV again in the capability sense, plus check state full signatures or CSFS are worthy of consideration. But this is a surefire way to sink it. Anthony Towns said, from his perspective, the CTV discussion has missed important steps. Instead of taking those steps, advocates have been attempting to use public pressure to force adoption on an accelerated timeline, pretty much continuously for at least 3 years now. I've tried to help CTV advocates take the steps I believe they've missed, but it's mostly resulted in silence or insults rather than anything constructive. At least from where I sit, this is just creating incentive problems, not solving them. First, Antoine Poinsot says, the effect of this letter has been, as could have been expected, a major setback in making progress on this proposal, or more broadly, this bundle of capabilities. I am not sure how we bounce back from this, but it necessarily involves someone standing up and actually doing the work of addressing technical feedback from the community and demonstrating real use cases. The way forward must be by building consensus on the basis of strong objective technical arguments, not with a bunch of people stating interest and nobody acting up and helping the proposal move forward. Second, S. Jaws Provost says, let me also speak a bit to my own motivation. Vaults appear to be the only feature enabled by the proposal that I personally find important enough to work on. Up until quite recently, it seemed to me that the momentum for vaults was in OP Vault, which would then require OP CTV. However, a single-purpose opcode is not ideal, so this project didn't seem to be going anywhere. Conversely, I do not oppose CTV plus CSFS. I haven't seen an argument that they are harmful. Since there is little MeVille potential, I could also imagine other developers carefully developing and rolling out these changes. I would just keep an eye on the process. What I would oppose is a Python-based alternative implementation and activation client, like co-signer Paul S. Zetorc proposed. Signatory statements. Signers of the letter also clarified their intentions in follow-up statements. James O'Byrne said, everyone who signed explicitly wants to see the imminent review, integration, and activation planning for CTV plus CSFS specifically. Andrew Polstra said, early drafts of the letter did ask for actual integration and even activation, but I did not sign any of those early drafts. It was not until the language was weakened to be about priorities and planning, and to be a respectful ask rather than some sort of demand, that I signed on. Stephen Roos said, the letter merely asks core contributors to put this proposal on their agenda with some urgency. No threats, no hard words. Given that only a handful of core contributors had thus far participated in the conversation on the proposal elsewhere, it seemed like a suitable next step to communicate that we want core contributors to provide their position within this conversation. I strongly stand against an approach involving independent activation clients, and I think the sentiment of this email aligns with the preference of having core be involved in any deployment of protocol upgrades. First, Harshagoli said, most people signed because they really had no idea what the next step ought to be, and the pressure for transaction commitments was so much so that a bad option piling on a sign-on letter was more optimal than inaction. In conversations prior to the letter going out, facilitated by my industry survey, I only received admonishment of the letter from many of the signatories. I actually don't know of a single person who considered it as an explicitly good idea, and still they signed. There's signal in that, first, OPCT enables Winternet's signatures, developer conduition posted to the Bitcoin dev mailing list a prototype implementation. This implementation uses the proposed OPCT opcode and other script instructions. This allows Quanta resistant signatures using the Winternet's protocol to be verified by consensus logic. Conduition's implementation requires almost 8,000 bytes for the key, signature, and script. Most of this is subject to the witness discount, reducing on-chain weight to about 2,000 V bytes. This is about 8,000 V bytes smaller than another OPCAT-based quantum resistant Lamport signature scheme previously proposed by Jeremy Rubin. Commit/reveal function for post-quantum recovery. Taj Dryger posted to the Bitcoin dev mailing list a method for allowing individuals to spend UXOs, that's unspent transaction outputs, using quantum vulnerable signature algorithms. This would work even if fast quantum computers would otherwise allow redirecting or stealing the output of any attempted spend. This would require a soft fork and is a variation of a previous proposal by Tim Ruffing C newsletter number 348. To spend an output in Dryger's scheme, the spender creates a commitment to three pieces of data. First, a hash of the public key corresponding to the private key that controls the funds. This is written as H of PubKey. This is called the address identifier. Second, a hash of the public key and the transaction ID or T's, ID of the transaction the spender wants to eventually broadcast. This is written as H of PubKey, TZ. This is called the sequence-dependent proof. Third, the transaction ID or T's ID of the eventual transaction. This is called the commitment T's ID. None of this information reveals the underlying public key. In this scheme, the public key is assumed to only be known to the person controlling the UXO, the unspent transaction output. The three-part commitment is broadcast in a transaction using a quantum secure algorithm, for example, as an OP return output. At this point, an attacker could attempt to broadcast their own commitment using the same address identifier but a different commitment T's ID that spends the funds to the attacker's wallet. However, there is no way for the attacker to generate a valid sequence-dependent proof, given that they don't know the underlying public key. This won't be immediately obvious to full verification nodes, but they will be able to reject the attacker's commitment after the UXO owner reveals the public key. After the commitment confirms to a suitable depth, the spender reveals the full transaction matching the commitment T's ID. Full nodes verify that the public key matches the address identifier and that, in combination with the transaction ID or T's ID, it matches the sequence-dependent proof. At this point, full nodes purge all but the oldest, most deeply confirmed commitments for that address identifier. Only the first confirmed T's ID for that address identifier with a valid sequence-dependent proof, can be resolved into a confirmed transaction. Dryger goes into additional details about how this scheme could be deployed as a soft fork. He also discusses how the commitment byte could be reduced by half, and what users and software today can do to prepare for using this scheme. He further covers limitations in this scheme for users of both scripted and scriptless multi-signatures. OPTX hash variant with support for transaction sponsorship. Stephen Roos posted to Delving Bitcoin about a variation on OPTX hash called TXSIASH. This extends 64-byte Schnorr signatures with additional bytes. These bytes indicate what fields in the transaction or related transactions the signature commits to. In addition to the previously proposed commitment fields for OPTX hash, Roos notes that the signature could commit to an earlier transaction in the block. This uses an efficient form of transaction sponsorship, see newsletter number 295. He then analyzes the on-chain costs of this mechanism compared to existing CPFP and a previous sponsorship proposal, concluding, with TXSIASH stacking, the cost in virtual bytes of each stacked transaction can even be lower than their original cost without a sponsor included. Additionally, all inputs are simple key spins, meaning that they could be aggregated if CISA were to be deployed. As of this writing, the post had not received any public replies. Notable code and documentation changes. Notable recent changes in Bitcoin Core, Core Lightning, Eclair, LDK, LND, Libsec 2, 150, 6K1, Hardware Wallet Interface, HWI, Rust Bitcoin, BTC Pay Server, BDK, Bitcoin Improvement Proposals, BIPs, Lightning Bolts, Lightning Blips, Bitcoin Inquisition, and Binonis. Bitcoin Core 30, 2005, 140 introduces the /rest/spent/out/block/hash/rest endpoint, which returns a list of spent transaction outputs provouts for a specified block, primarily in a compact binary, bin, format but also in JSON and hex variants. Although it was previously possible to do this with the /rest/block/block hash, JSON endpoint, the new endpoint improves the performance of external indexers by eliminating JSON serialization overhead. Bitcoin Core 30, 2006, 130, 8 adds validation to ensure that any block read from disk matches the expected block hash, catching bit rot and index mix-ups that could have gone unnoticed previously. Thanks to the header hash cache introduced in Bitcoin Core 30, 2487, this extra check is virtually overhead free. Bitcoin Core 30, 2008, 119 and 30, 2530, set the maximum values for the maximum pool and DB cache startup parameters to 500 MB and 1 GB respectively on 32-bit systems. Since this architecture has a total RAM limit of 4 GB, values higher than the new limits could cause out-of-memory incidents. First, LDK issue number 3618 implements the client's IDE logic for asynchronous payments. This allows an offline recipient node to prearrange Bolt 12 offers and static invoices with an always online helper LSP node. The pull request introduces an asynchronous receive offer cache inside of Channel Manager. This cache builds, stores, and persists offers and invoices. It also defines the new onion messages and hooks needed to communicate with the LSP, and threads the state machine through the offer's message flow. Want more? For more discussion about the topics mentioned in this newsletter, join us for the weekly Bitcoin Optech recap on riverside.fm at 16:30 UTC on July 8th. The discussion is also recorded and will be available from our podcast's page.